You know, I used to hear that voice every day, not over the phone, but right next to me. And it's not that I just got used to it. It became music to my ears. And I felt a closeness to the person who has that voice. And I miss her terribly. Greetings. This is the Automatically Deleted Husband. Unfortunately, Chris didn't make it today. His younger son, his car was totaled, and he was involved in trying to get that replaced. So that delayed things, and the hope still is maybe tomorrow. he has the weekend before he goes back to work on his vacation. But anyway. I keep up with COVID. So let's talk about COVID again, because it does concern me. I really wonder how many of my family or extended family have been immunized. Again, CDC, immunization and vaccination are interchangeable terms, according to the CDC. You know, you can check and see if this is true. They may eventually drop that correlation, and they avoid the term immunization simply because the vaccine doesn't immunize. This is clear. I mean, how many people do we hear about, you know, including the president of the United States, who has been fully vaccinated and has gotten COVID once or twice? I don't remember. But anyway. But, you know, some new things have come out. I saw an article, people dying in their sleep linked to vaccines, which apparently, and I read the article and explains the issue of myocarditis, that this is the thing that is killing, especially young people. And apparently, as I pointed out before, what happens is if you have myocarditis and add adrenaline to it, you're doing something athletic. The two of them mix together and the heart stops. And apparently, the waking process, the normal waking process, there are some things that happen within our body that are effectively similar to the effect of adrenaline. And if you have a myocarditis, instead of waking up, you die. And apparently, this is happening. You know, people are going blind. Just simply going blind who are vaccinated, a bunch of things like that. And it's a real concern. And of course, again, the issue is somebody in my family or extended family vaccinated? I also read an article, The Cult of the Branch COVIDian and the Banality of Evil. You may remember the Branch Davidians, which is a breakoff of the denomination. They're just down the street. Seventh-day Adventists. They broke off from them many years ago. And then, of course, they had a charismatic figure, David Koresh, who took the stage. They developed a compound that had a lot of people living on it, and he made some claims. He made some claims that were a little outlandish, and then, of course, our government eliminated him and a whole bunch of his followers. You know, in Waco, Texas. So they were called the Branch Davidians, and so the play on words, Branch Covidians, because the idea is a whole bunch of people following a cult. That's exactly what it is. It really is. I mean, it's identical. But the one other thing came out recently, just came out this last week or so. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Wrote a book called The Real Anthony Fauci, and now that was made into a, apparently sold really well. even though it was sequestered, and now there's a video form of that, and I watched it. If you go to like BitChute or some of that nature and search for The Real Anthony Fauci, there's a whole bunch of copies of it there, so it's easy to find it. But it is, You know, the thing that bothers me is when you make videos, especially when they have a budget, and they do, you know, so much editing. Everything is short clips and so forth. That bothers me. But the content level of this is very good. It really is good because they show history. They do some fancy stuff with a timeline and whatnot, and they go back and forth, which, you can question that. But overall, I think the reason they go back and forth is because they do various issues, and they show how one thing led to another and so forth. You know, for example, they even went back to like the anthrax issue that happened shortly after 9/11, and described how it all follows through. They go through the various other Ebola, swine flu, bird flu, and all those kind of things, how one led to the other. And there's a common player in a lot of this stuff, a gentleman by the name of Anthony Fauci. Because that's one of the things that I think is really helpful. They showed him saying things 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago that really don't play well today, because it shows how it's all, you know, it's led, one thing's led to another. As I've described so often about how, you know, the change of the AMA, how that was used to get rid of alternative forms of medicine, the allopathic is the only way to do it, you know, take a drug versus, or we're going to cut you up, versus the idea of, the natural path, or even homeopathy and acupuncture and all these kind of things. They call that quackery, and you got to take a pill. Why do you want to take a pill? There's a lot of money in those pills. Huge. Brought to you by Pfizer. And there's a reason that companies like Pfizer can pay multi-billion-dollar fines. That's just price of doing business. And of course, they do point out several times that the vaccine industry has no liability. This, many have pointed this out, because this has obviously been a big deal for a long time. If you get hurt by a vaccine, the vaccine company won't pay any fines, any fees, whatnot. Who you sue is the federal government. And this federal government has paid out apparently several billion dollars to people because of vaccine injuries. The problem is that several billion dollars for vaccine injuries pre-COVID-19. And now what would happen? I would suggest it's, a reasonable possibility, if this was a real corporation, the government was a real corporation, it could bankrupt them. What they would have to pay out for the number of injuries caused by the COVID vaccine. But anyway, it's been fascinating. They show a lot of really good information. But the thing that I found fascinating, too, is part two. Near the end of it, one of the things I really appreciated, there's I think it was his exit speech, President Eisenhower. And he gave us the term the military-industrial complex, and that's where that whole idea became popular, because of that speech. And often you will see quoted in a lot of people's videos, so they'll show this the short quote of the rise, whatever, of the military-industrial complex. You see that short quote. And sometimes I have seen the longer stuff, but it's rare. But they did it in this video. Because the thing that really catches my eye about that is he talks about the inventor or the developer, the inventor working in his, I think he said garage or whatever, coming up with something new. And he says that's been replaced by the government grants, because the scientific community it has to become a team, and they have the big budgets. And that's government only. And the small player has been pushed aside. I know this very well. Because, as I pointed out yesterday, I think, about the idea of big corporations, where a lot of the, especially people who are software developers or, scientists in some form or the other, working, maybe 4 or 5 hours a week kind of thing. And because the objective is to have a lot of people being paid big salaries. And most of the time, when we get together, we say, rah, rah, we're doing wonderful things. Again, I've been in the middle of this. And that's what you do all day. But actually, you know, if I think about it, I remember having some technical discussions, really digging in deep when I was at Magnavox. You know, this is my first real job post the Air Force, where I did the Harley-Davidson ignition system and the AgNav system, which was very early navigation system for, you know, for farmers. And there were several gentlemen that I would talk with them, and it was, why, how does this work, and how can we do it better? Most of those conversations were, they were doing a different part, and we were looking at the technology together in order to do a good job, in order to develop a motorcycle ignition system that was half the price of the previous generation and have some additional capabilities. You know, the one thing I've mentioned is to prevent what they call it, kickback or whatever, when you start it with a hand crank or, you know, foot crank, if it backfires, it could blow your leg off, and that's not comfortable. It's like picking up one of these pedal mines in Donbass, you know, that the Ukrainians have dropped in Donbass that maim children. You know, it's uncomfortable, so you try to avoid those kind of things. But, you know, there was also, when I was in the Air Force, there were a few people. One gentleman I knew in California, one gentleman in when I was in Germany, and another gentleman, where was he? Was he in Europe? Or was he? I don't remember. But anyway, people who actually, we had dialogues on the technology because we wanted to understand. You know, it's kind of like when I took some courses in, you know, in order to get access to the computer, basically, at UC Riverside, UC Riverside, yeah, University of California, Riverside, and Riverside City College. I took courses at both in order to get access to the computer. You know, an IBM 360 with 4 megabytes of core. you know, the world was different then. But the you know, there was some conversations. Once I got into the commercial world, you know, after the demise of Heritage Systems and got into the commercial world with companies with big budgets, medical companies, defense contractors, Microsoft itself, we don't talk about that. Those dialogues were pretty much gone. I had a fair one or two at Microsoft, but really surface. And it was, you don't talk about this. I don't know if I really had a conversation technology-wise with anyone. Because our objective is policies, don't we feel good? Doesn't this look good on the screen? Those kind of things. But the structure of the design, you don't do that. And I really think it's a cultural problem, and that happens with the military-industrial complex. Because it's, you know, we also call it the medical-industrial complex, because it's identical. Because you have the big budgets, and the big budgets are used to destroy people. In the sense of, we don't think, we collectivize. And it's a problem. One of the things that, you know, because if you look at, you know, because obviously Shelfware Nexus is there. It's free to download and so forth. Not very well documented. But the tool, especially at the demo site, because you go to the demo site, it's all open. The tools to see things happening and so forth are right there in front of you. You want to see how messages are going back and forth, how they're, you know, there's this, the popular program to look at internet traffic is a program called Wireshark, because it's free. So it became popular over anything that's paid for. And it's quite good. I use it, I have it. But I have basically the same ability built into Shelfware Nexus only covering the communications protocols that I deal with, but the other thing is, it doesn't just give you that. It says it allows you to see how it is actually then processed. So it's one thing to see what's going back and forth across the wire. It's another thing to say, great, it came in. Here's the data. The data just went across the wire, and then here's how it's processed. How it comes in. How each step of the processing. Going from a packet to the stream or a kit in Chauffeur Nexus, and then how it's then responded to the reverse process to send data out. You see all the steps. In logging is really serious with Chauffeur Nexus. So you can see all the data. You can see things internally down to the byte level, or you know, basically every little bit. You can see it. So what I find different about this is so many tools within, you know, if you have, fortunately, for example, a web browser, you hit F12, and this has become standard on virtually every web browser. You hit F12, and you get to the diagnostic tools that are built in, which is very helpful. Most people, I would suggest, don't know how to use them, but it's there. And it allows you to see for the fact you can see where, oh, look, I went to this page, especially a WordPress page, and it's going to Google, it's going to WordPress besides the site, it's going to other places. I'm being tracked, and you are being tracked. I mean, you can see those tools, those links, the data going back and forth. But there's also one of the things is mentioned is the idea of transparency. So in the real Anthony Fauci movie, there is the concern about all sorts of the popular one that they mentioned it in the movie, but you know, because it occurred several months ago, where I think it's Pfizer said, okay, we have all these documents and we're going to release them over the next 75 years. And it's kind of like, well, that becomes useless. Because it's what's, as you'll see it discussed, lack of transparency. We're going to do this. We're going to say we have all the evidence, but we're not going to let you see the evidence. This occurs, you know, it's the same thing that occurs in our military ventures. You know, what occurred in Syria and Iraq and whatnot. Oh, we have the data, but we're not going to tell you. So it's hidden. And one of the great ones about this, which is fascinating, is you may remember early 2000s, I think, there was the global warming. The world's going to burn up, and it's all because of we're using too many SUVs. And the data came from the temperature curve and the infamous hockey stick curve that, you know, we're suddenly skyrocketing in because of too much CO2, which is there's a fallacy in all of that. However, but the people, especially the individual who was responsible for producing the data, people ask him, can we see the raw data? So can we verify your findings? And he said, no. He's something like, it took me like 25 years to collect all this stuff. And you want me to give it away? No. And, the reason that occurred, because there was falsification, because this is where it may have been WikiLeaks, it may have been somebody else leaked the emails that showed that this data was falsified. So the whole hockey stick thing and the global warming information was a fraud, this East Anglia University data. And because of lack of transparency, they simply could make the claim, and they didn't have to back it up because you couldn't see the raw data. And then, of course, we changed from global warming to climate change because global warming is a problem because at that point we're in a period of global cooling. So it's kind of like, uh-oh, well, let's change the terms. So now we have climate change. So it doesn't matter if it goes warmer or cooler. We simply call it climate change. We don't have to show a rise in temperature, but we can use that same idea that, oh, okay, we gave you the global warming idea that's seated in your mind, so now we're going to continue on this. So anyway, But there's lack of transparency there. And so you see this in all sorts of data. Again, the medical community, you see it in our military ventures, you see it in the scientific community and so forth. Yes, we have the evidence. We're not going to share it with you. We're not going to give you the raw data. We're going to give you the conclusions. And I really think this is a big problem, a really big problem. That's why my focus has been simplify, simplify, simplify in order to make the data as simple as possible. It was the one of the lines that I think is attributed to Einstein. Make things simpler, make things as simple as possible, but no simpler, something like that. Because that's what I'm striving to do. It's taken years to make the core and the data structures of Shofar Nexus simple. I've gone through over the years many derivations where it's kind of like, this is getting too complicated, and I pull it out and simplify it. This is not the way you do things in the corporate world, because you want complexity. You don't want simplification. That's why Shofar Nexus is rather, I think the file right now is like 5 megabytes or 50 megabytes to download it. But only like 2 megabytes of that is the actual program. The rest is because the documentation's there. The ESV is there and things of that nature. And a whole lot of images and whatnot. So that's what the bulk of it is. The program itself is only about 2 megabytes. Or maybe even less. Well, it's under 2 megabytes, I think. Because the objective is simple. And it takes a whole lot of work to make it simple. It really does. I recommend the real Anthony Fauci video. I really think it gives insight. And the Eisenhower comment and whatnot, seeing it more complete is important. Seeing how a bunch of these people you see in the video, the medical community, are outcasts within the medical community because they show where COVID-19 is a fraud. And, some of these people were really high placed, including one of these guys is the guy who developed the mRNA technology. And says, I'm sorry, we got a problem here. One of the guys is, well, and of course, was it Mullis, the guy who did the PCR? Their comment in there, because I keep saying PCR test because that's how it's described. The point is made, and I think it's an important point. It's not a test. It's a methodology, but to use it to make it as a test is a fallacy. Because the whole thing is a fallacy. Anyway, because again, this is the case-demic as opposed to the pandemic. My concern has my family. Well, yes, they have. My wife did, the one very rare comment I got from my wife is that she did put masks on her kids. And I'm sorry she was fooled. Her husband has never worn a mask. Reason being, because it's stupid. The thing that I found troubling, because I've used the example often that wearing a mask is like stopping mosquitoes with a chain link fence. Because the proportions are correct. They really are. The size of a mosquito and a chain link fence is the same size of the COVID, and the the holes within a mask. You know, it just flows right through. And they used stopping ping pong balls with a chain link fence. So it's kind of like, because, you know, the whole point of this mosquito is obviously a mosquito with the legs. When you're going to get stopped by the, you know, the legs, because the body's really tiny. So if you spread the legs out, you have roughly the size of a ping pong ball. So, you know, so we have, you know, but either way, ping pong ball, mosquito with a chain link fence. Yeah, good luck. Yeah, I mean, anyway. But see, to what degree, and you know, honestly, I really wonder. My hope is, because my wife said there was going to be no vaccination. I don't know if she held to that. And, but I wonder about Eric Lee, Brent and Leo, because she seems to be have become very submissive to the collective. I wonder if Jack would have done the same. And I wonder about Tirza, because it seems she's become part of the world. So and since those three, and of course Eric Lee and her family, since they are separate, did they buy in? And then of course Julia, but I don't know the influences of Julia. Are there those around her that would encourage her in that direction? Or are those saying, no, this is stupid? Besides her dad, but of course I'm isolated from her dad. She's isolated from her dad. But the, by the way, the postcard was sent today to Julia, because this morning I watched again from the dance videos at MetaView years ago, and pointed out that the one that I linked to, the guy who did the camera work was biased. Definitely. Anyway, because, I mean, Julia's cute. What can I say? Julia's cute. I think so are her kids, but I haven't seen them yet. But I don't know what she's done, what she's done to, what's happened to my grandkids. My hope is my other kids, you know, George through Zadok, have been kept away from that. But because of the fact they wore the mask, I'm not sure. And especially if somebody gets the idea, it's no big deal. But what happened? Apparently, George has been dramatically impacted because he was vaccinated. You know, that's why I got the Vaxxed and Vaxxed 2 videos. One of them was sent to Julia, the second one. I don't remember what happened to the second one, but anyway. Because there's a concern. We had concerns already, and now we have this huge thing. And again, the death count is tremendous. So I wonder about my own family. And the thing I didn't, you know, and of course, you know, Jim Cross and Madge Cross, I think they're submissive enough that they're probably vaccinated. I really do. But the other thing I just realized, you know, again, using CDC's data, Jack's longevity may be shortened by roughly 20 years from average. Considering my state of health, if he goes short by 20 years and I go long, I can outlive my son. But if he's also vaccinated, That increases the odds. That'll outlive Jack. He's my son. It's a horrible thing to think. I wouldn't be surprised if Jack's been vaccinated. You know, again, the issue of the microclots, because those who apparently have taken the D-dimer test, because unlike so many other things, there's a direct test you can take. It's not a guesswork. And that's why I did the video about the pre-vaccinated should take the D-dimer test. So before you get vaccinated, and, you know, whoever's left, well, includes me, you get the D-dimer test. You get the vaccine. Get the boosters and all the other stuff. Whatever you want to do. And then after it's settled in for, what, maybe a few weeks, you get the D-dimer test again. And if you see a rise, that rise apparently is permanent. What does the D-dimer test measure? Microclots. And what is it? What happens to your body when you have the microclots? It's under stress 24 hours a day that otherwise you wouldn't have had. And it wears your body out and it reduces your lifespan. And also, probably, you know, if you're, you know, physically active, it's going to reduce that. I'm concerned about my family. But I'm isolated from them. Anyway. I have other things to share, but I'm making 30 minutes to 1 hour videos. It's getting ridiculous. My lady, my wife, I'm trying to appeal to my family. I'm trying to let them know that there's somebody who cares about them. I want them to understand propaganda. And, you know, part of the reason about this, the real Anthony Fauci video, is it shows the impact of propaganda. And it shows the impact of the fraud behind COVID. You know, the propaganda that, you know, the current thing about Ukraine, the propaganda. And one of the things I do wonder about, because I was thinking about that today, because, you know, so many times it takes a while to build up the idea that those people are bad. And it may take years or even decades, and then now we can go to war, such as Iraq or Vietnam, if you go back a little bit further, or, you know, things of that nature. So it takes a while to build up into the culture of hate. But it's one thing to hate those people. So you need to find other things to get people to hate or be in fear of. So a disease. Because, oh, it's against everybody. And you can look over the past many decades, especially the last few decades, again, about the various, you know, the swine flu, bird flu, and so forth, that in reality, it's propaganda, because way blown out of proportion. And in the cases where vaccines were used, they were more deadly than the disease, which is true with COVID-19, but that's inversion. Well, it's consistent. But you see the buildup. And I suggest what you're seeing over the years, over decades now, the buildup of the coming ice age, which was the 70s, then global warming, now climate change. And of course, that stays in the news. You know, kind of a little fringe thing, but it stays in the news. The popular thing right now is the eco activists, or however, you know, they're going to museums, art museums, and throwing paint and whatnot on art and gluing themselves to the paintings and things of that nature, or to the wall next to the painting and whatnot, as stunts. To say, what's more important, art or, you know, saving the planet? And you see this building up. You know, and the problem is fraud. It really is fraud. Again, the data is hidden. They simply tell you conclusions. because if you see the data, I'm sorry. You know, the one thing I found fascinating, because years ago, there was the idea of looking at ice cores and saying, oh, we can look through the centuries to see how the climate has changed. It's garbage. It's absolute garbage. You know, because they use the mentality is like tree, the rings in the tree, because the way throughout the year the environment changes and therefore the way the tree is growing changes and it causes the rings. And you know, we can see that. And so we say, oh, that's what causes layers in the ice packs in various places around the world, because it's just being built up one layer on top of the other. It's baloney. It doesn't work. And one of the ways that was demonstrated there have been several ways where you can see inconsistencies, because there are places. I saw one recently in Greenland where it's like so many times where they find various things and they do carbon dating and whatnot and say, oh, it's so many millions of years of old and it's, you know, it's 3 weeks old or whatever. So they can demonstrate the fraud there. Then the same kind of thing with the measurement of ice layers, because, you know, they say the change is, you know, year. You know, this also day, night, you know, we don't want to go there. But, you know, because we had a few cold days, we had warm days, cold days and whatnot. It's not this major, minor thing. And this idea that it's layer built on top of each other goes to the idea that you know that the stratification, the various layers on the Earth occur because, you know, things are building on top of each other. You know, the Grand Canyon has these layers, and they say, oh, well, it's because of millions of years. That's baloney. That's absolute baloney. Again, the example, because we saw it happen. The evidence is right there. If you look at it, the Mount St. Helens, where something, it's like 1/6, I think, the depth of the Grand Canyon river was carved in the matter of hours, and it has the stratification layers. It doesn't happen because a million years and layer upon layer being laid. It's been explained. It occurs very rapidly. But so the same thing is true in a similar way in ice. And one of the examples I found is there was a World War II airplane landed somewhere in Greenland, I think, Iceland, wherever it was. And over a while, they couldn't be found. But then it was found like in the last 10 years, really deep in the ice. And they carved holes, did a couple holes, deep holes, near it, in order to then go down and then go sideways to actually recover it. But if you say, oh, well, the plane slowly sank, why? It wasn't warm to melt through, because this was like 100 feet down or more. I mean, it was deep. So it didn't melt through, and those layers would have been distorted, and they weren't. On top of it were all these layers. So if you look at those ice core layers and say, oh, well, this is how many years, it was like, you know, it's been, that airplane's been down there for a million years. No, it hasn't. You know, I'm sorry. That's stupid. If you believe that, you're stupid. I'm sorry. There's no other word for it. Anyway, it's the fallacy is amazing, and the minions will follow it. And I want my kids not to. Anyway, I got so long. Sorry. I want to encourage my kids, and I can't get to them. My son, Zadok, is about to have his 11th birthday on Sunday. I'm not invited to the birthday party. I'm his dad. I've never been invited to a birthday party with Zadok. I've never had a face-to-face conversation with Zadok. It rips you apart. My only solution. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Because I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. I have no other option. And really, in the grace of God, I have no other desire. If I can somehow bless my family, even if I never see them again, that is my desire. That is my hope. Obviously, I'm hated by a whole bunch of people. And I'm going to try to respond in love. This is my effort. If it's clumsy, so what? At least it's done. My lady, my wife, I haven't given up. I love you and I want you back.